You're listening to a sermon from Christian Life, the Island Church, in Orange Beach, Alabama. For more information, visit christianlifechurch.tv.
Hey, good morning. I'll share a little bit of my testimony, and then we'll just take it from there and tell you the full story. I'll go back to 1990. 1990, I was running from God, didn't want to have anything to do with Him. June 2nd, 1990, I was riding my motorcycle. No helmet, just shorts and t-shirt. And a guy ran a stop sign. I hit him 45 miles an hour, T-boned him, totaled my motorcycle, and slid 40 feet on pavement and got up with a scratch on my arm. And so I know that day that there's an angel that undergirded me and protected me. And that still did not get my attention. And then, you know, I had run-ins with the law, a couple almost near fatal car wrecks. That still didn't get my attention. One night I got pulled over. It was in April of 91. I got pulled over by the Indiana State Police. I grew up in a small farming community, and so I had drugs on me. He pulled me over. I thought for sure I was going to go to jail that night, and he let me go. And the next morning, my mom called, and she was hysterical. She was very upset. I said, what's the matter with you? And she said, you were in trouble last night, weren't you? I said, how do you know? She said, it was 8 o'clock, wasn't it? I said, yeah, I got pulled over by the Indiana State Police. She said, I was at church and I prayed for you. And that's why I got away with that. And then it was a couple weeks later, I'd taken a bunch of drugs. I felt like I was dying that night. I felt like I was going in and out of consciousness. And then the next morning, I was fine. And this lady named Jane Howard, I don't know her, didn't know her. She somehow got my phone number. She called me. She said, are you Jay? I said, I am. She said, God woke me up last night in the middle of my sleep and told me to pray for you the entire night. Jay, I seen your face 12 times in the fire. Do you know what that means? I said, I know what that means. I almost died 12 times. I would have went to hell. She said, yes, and you need to get your life right with God. So it was May 9th, 1991. I checked in the Teen Challenge. So I'm a 91 Teen Challenge graduate. And so when I came out of Teen Challenge... When I came out of Teen Challenge, I worked a few jobs, you know, in factories, and then I worked in a prison for juveniles, a maximum security, and I ended up going to the Brownsville Revival, and Steve Hill had a thing for praying with Teen Challenge graduates, so he prayed over me, he prophesied to me. I was 26 years old at the time. He said, within a year, you're going to be in full-time ministry. I'm thinking, I don't know how that's going to happen. I'm 26, I'm married, I have a kid. I've never even been to Bible college. And it was a year later, I ended up in master's commission in Lafayette, Indiana for 3 years. And during that time, we went on a missions trip to Southeast Washington, D.C. and worked with a inner city missionary. And so as we're heading back to Indiana, God spoke to me that going back and said, you're gonna work with that missionary. I said, oh, no, I'm not. That's inner city. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And so it was that was October 99, so April 2000. I called that missionary and said, look, do you have an apartment in your building? He said, we don't have anything. I said, well, I'm coming out to see you Saturday. If God wants me to work with you, then he's going to open up an apartment for me. And if he doesn't, then that's his way of telling me that I don't have to work with you. And so... I kind of put myself in a corner with God, and so I got there that Saturday morning. It was April 1st, and so it was 2 in the afternoon, and so when I got there, the missionary, Ken Brown, he came out, and he was real happy, and I said, what's the matter with you? And he said, the most amazing thing happened this morning at 10 o'clock. The family up in apartment 302 up and moved out, and now you have a place to live. And so I spent 4 years in Southeast Washington, D.C., working with that missionary, training with him. And so I knew, I was only supposed to be there 2 years, I stayed four, and then I knew that I longed to get back to the Midwest. And so as I prayed and asked God, where do you want me to go? The Lord spoke to me and said, I want you to go to East St. Louis. And I said, well, why do I have to go there? God, that's a very dangerous, it's a very violent city. And the Lord said, Jay, this is where I want you. And so June 29, 2004 was my first day in East St. Louis. Now, you have to keep in mind, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a building. I didn't have any staff. I'm just there. And so I found a bus bench that day, and I sat on it, and I said to God, I said, I'm here now. What do you want me to do? You sent me here with nothing. And the Lord spoke three things to me that day. He said, Jay, I want you to reach out to the addicted, the afflicted, and the hopeless. I want you to plant four churches, and I want you to raise up indigenous pastors. So as we fast forward today, we have seven buildings. We planted four churches. All of our pastors are indigenous, and we are working on our 11th plant here in the next couple weeks. It'll launch in Phoenix, Arizona. And so here's the thing. At this point, with everything that we're doing, we are still a debt-free inner-city ministry. And so that's a lot just in itself, to be able to run everything week in, week out, debt-free. And so, you know, when I first got there, my first year, I would have to drive around East St. Louis. If you've never been there, you have no idea what that city's like. It looks like a war zone. Blocks and blocks of burned out houses, abandoned buildings. It's even hard to believe that people even live there. There's 15 different housing projects in that city. And so the first year I was driving around that city with my windows down and my doors unlocked on my car doing ministry. Now, I got a little freaked out when drug dealers would jump in my car at stop signs. That really freaked me out. And so I learned early on how to get them out of my car as quick as they got in. I just started preaching, and they got out as quick as they got in. And so I began to learn the culture. I began to learn the community. And you know, all my pastors are still with me today. So I've been there 13 years. I've been able to maintain all my crew. They run everything, and it allows me to go out on the weekends. And so I remember... I knew the complexity of the city, and so I was intrigued with those crack houses because I've seen people there all the time. And so we had a custom-built cooker made. And so I said at this time I had one pastor on staff with me. I said, Eddie, I want to take the cooker to those crack houses. I want to cook out and see what happens. He said, what, are you crazy? I said, probably a little crazy and called. But I'm just curious, what would happen if we just fed people there? And so that first day there, we fed over 60 people. What we began to do was build relationships. See, I learned early on, the best way to a man's heart is through his belly. You cannot reach out and meet the physical or the spiritual needs of people until we've met the physical need. And so we did it for a long time. We did ministry there. That whole area, it's not even there anymore. They tore down all those buildings and put brand new houses in there. Well, I was intrigued with the corners of the community too, and I knew this one corner, they said it was the most violent corner in the city. In a three-year time period, three people have been shot and killed on that corner. On any given day, there'd be 10 to 15 drug dealers and gang members hanging out on that corner. And so at this time, I had three pastors on staff with me, and I didn't say anything to them because I knew they would just go crazy. And so I just decided one day after driving past there looking at those men that we needed to do a cookout there. And so on this one day, I pulled the van up 20 feet from those guys. I shut it off. I said to my pastors, are you guys ready? Tommy says, what do you mean are we ready? Pastor, I grew up in this neighborhood. You're on the most violent corner in the city. I said, I know that, Tommy. And this is how you have to look at it. Once we take this corner, the rest of them are going to be easy. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. God's not giving me a spirit of fear. He's giving me a spirit of love and a sound mind. But I do have a spirit of concern. This thing's gotten so bad now, I don't even like driving through big cities. Because if we drive through them, God tells us to plant a church. So I figure if I don't see it, he won't say anything. And so we cooked out that day, and we built friendships with those men. And you know what? That corner no longer exists. The apartment building that they dealt drugs in, it burned down to the ground. And so it literally leveled that area out. Well, we have a prostitution problem in our city, so it's not uncommon for us to take our speed light van out on Friday nights, take young girls off the streets and give them in programs. We still do ministry with the homeless people. We have homeless camps in St. Louis, and so we do that type of stuff. And so there's a hotel that was like 1,000 feet from our church in East St. Louis. And I knew what went on in there. I knew it was a brothel. I knew that there was prostitution going on in there. There's drugs going on in there. And I was just trying to figure out, how can we get in there? Well, Aldi's used to donate all their bread and buns to us. And so one day they called me and they said, hey, look, we have buckets of roses and we don't know what to do with them. We're going to throw them out. Would you like them? I said, I'll take them. So I called my pastors and I said, meet me at the building at 7 o'clock. I want to do a little ministry. And so they met us. They said, where are we going? I said, we're going to the Royal Inn tonight. They said, what are we going there for? I said, we have all these bundles of roses and there are women in there that are being abused and neglected. And I want to take flowers to them tonight and I want to love on them. And I want them to invite them to church in the morning. And so we did that. And we did it for a long time. We reached out. We did ministry in there. The hotel burned down. And so it seems like wherever we do ministry, God just has a way of cleaning things up. And so we launched our, well, here's the thing I want to say. If Jesus was in East St. Louis, he'd be hanging out at crack houses. He'd be on the corner with those drug dealers and those gang members. He'd be in the brothels with the prostitute. And I want to remind you this morning that in the middle of the bloodline of Christ is a prostitute named Rahab. Think about that. What a statement that God would make. And Jesus, he would be in the Royal Inn. And who would have issue with Jesus being in those places? Church people. I want to remind you this morning that it was not dirty, rotten, stinking sinners that put Jesus on a cross, hung him, and killed him. It was church people. Friend, we cannot become religious. We have to guard our hearts because outside the walls of this building this morning are people that don't know Jesus. And they're lost as all get out. They don't know they're lost, but they're hurting, they're desperate, they're hoping for change. And you and I are the very agents that can do that work this morning. If you are a believer in Christ, you do not have an exemption card. You are not exempt from ministry. If you're a believer in Jesus, you are a missionary where you work and where you live. We are all called to serve the kingdom, to build his kingdom. Every one of us in this room this morning, God has a plan and purpose for your life. And if you will invite Jesus to be a part of your life, then he will do it. Listen, God's a gentleman. He's not just going to bust the doors down in your life and just show up and make you do something. He's standing there. He's waiting at the door, and he's knocking. And if you open the door, he will come in. He'll sup with you. If you open the door and you say, okay, Lord, there's no reservations on my life. You can do as you please. Then he will take your life, and he will use it to build his kingdom. And so we launched our first church in East St. Louis in July of 06. And that was an amazing thing. And so I'm, you know, we launched it. I'm trying to figure out, okay, where's number 2, 3, and 4 going? Well, it was July of 07 that two buildings in Washington Park, that it was an Assembly of God church that had struggled for years. The district didn't know what to do with them, so they called me one day and they said, we have two buildings we'd like to offer you. Do you want them? I said, well, I'll take them if you let me do whatever I want and you don't tell me what to do. So they said, fine. And so we took those buildings, and then we launched our second church in October of 2008, Living Word Church. And then we did something that was, they said we shouldn't do it, But I couldn't. I just had to do it because it's what God said to do. We planted an all Spanish-speaking church in a black neighborhood. They said it wouldn't work. They said, you're out of your mind. I said, it will work if we get the right pastor in. And so I said, okay, God, I need you to give me the right guy that understands the culture of where he's at. And so I met a guy named Ramon Granados. And after about 6 months of working with me, he felt really bad, and he confessed to me that by the time he was 39 years old, they spent 19 years in prison, that they moved him around to prison around the United States because of his ties with gangs. And so in 2000, he got saved in prison. He got baptized in the Holy Ghost out in the rec yard, and then they turned him loose. And so he'd been, you know, serving God all that time. He'd been doing outreach every weekend in Juarez. And it was, and he lived in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and God spoke to him in 08 to move up to the East St. Louis area and plant a church. And so God put us together. So in October 2009, we launched Great Light Christian Center. And they're running about 70 to 100 on Sunday mornings. It works. It's amazing what will work if we will take the faith and do what God's calling us to do. Oftentimes, ministry doesn't get started in the church because we don't step out in faith. Listen, our whole ministry is all by faith. You know, and so we launched our third church. And so I was praying and asking God, where do you want me to launch the fourth church? And I heard him say, I want you to reach the Bosnians. I said, Bosnians? I don't understand, God. What are you talking about, Bosnians? He said, they're over the river. See, I'm on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River, over the river, St. Louis, Missouri. And so I researched, and what I found out is St. Louis has the largest population of Bosnians outside of Bosnia. There's 60 to 70,000. 90% of them are Muslim. They've been there for 10 years, and nobody in the Assemblies of God had ever reached out to them. So I said, okay, God, I'll plant the church if you give me a planter. And so 9 months later, I get a phone call from a guy named Andrew Austin from Janesville, Wisconsin. He says, I was given your name and number and heard that you plant churches. So I said, Andrew, why are you calling me for today? He said, well, my wife and I applied to be world missionaries of Bosnia, and we were turned down. We were told that we did not have enough pastoral experience. So as we researched the Bosnian populations here in America, he said, there are 10 populations in America, but the largest one is in St. Louis, and we feel called to reach them. I said, congratulations, Andrew Austin. You are our church planter. He said, wait a minute, you don't even know me. How could you say that? I said, Andrew, do not overthink this. That's what happens with us. We overthink and we justify what God's calling us to do when all he's asking is for us to take a step of faith. So Andrew agreed to it. He raised his budget. And then he calls me and says, look, Jay, we need to get a building. I said, Andrew, I've been thinking about this for a long time. And you have to understand that inner city ministry cannot sustain debt. So you cannot go get a loan for a building. He said, well, what do I do? I said, well, if God doesn't show up and show out, you're in trouble. It's God, he has to do this. But don't feel bad because we have policies in place. Policy number one, if it's God's will, then it's his bill. I've seen God do it 6 times in East St. Louis and Washington Park. I bought four buildings in East St. Louis. I bought the first two for $15,000. I bought the third one for $11,000. I bought the fourth one for $7,000. We own 4 buildings on 1 block in downtown East St. Louis. And God provided the money. He spoke to people. They wrote out checks and paid for the buildings for us. And then we were given those 2 buildings in Washington Park. Policy number two, and this is where you come in. If you send it, I will spend it. I'm a missionary. It's what I do. I take your money, we take your money, we invest and plant churches and raise up leaders. I have 20-some guys right now working with me across the country planting inner city churches. Policy number three, if it's free, it's me. And so I don't know, Andrew, how God's going to do this, but I do know that God is faithful and God has a plan and purpose. And so here I was in that time frame speaking at a church up in Iowa. And after the service, this gentleman and his wife, they walk up to me. They hand me a check for $5,000. Then the man hands me his business card. He says, you can call me or you can email me when you're ready. My wife and I want to give you another check for $50,000 to help you buy a building. Now it's like a deer in headlights. I'm processing all this. I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what this guy does for a living, but I just couldn't ask him. And after the service, the pastor says to me, do you know that that guy is visiting this morning? He doesn't even attend our church. I said, well, who is he? He said, well, Jay, would you pray with us that he starts attending our church? I said, well, who is he? He said, that's Mike Wells, the CEO and owner of Blue Bunny Ice Cream. So no more Edie's. If you have Blue Bunny here, you have to start eating Blue Bunny now. Because every scoop, you're given admissions. And then through a series of events, when I was a master's commission for 3 years, I worked at Hobby Lobby. I would push a broom around the store. I'd be cleaning toilets. And God would speak to me and say, one day you're going to plant inner city churches all around the country. David Green's going to become your friend and help you. And so in 2011, I met with David Green. And then he had me come out 2 months later. And then he arranged for me to speak at his church he attended on a Wednesday night. So I spoke there. And then after the service, his wife deposited $50,000 in my missionary account. And so we had $100,000. We bought a building that the guy wanted $134,000. We paid him $100,000 cash. And the building today praises for $120,000. And so it kept us in the debt-free zone. And so I said to the Lord, okay, God, I've done what you've asked me to do. I planted churches. I've worked myself out of a job. Now what? He didn't say anything for a while. He gave me a place. It was a time of rest. And then he spoke to me and said, I want you to plant a church in Denver. And I said, you're not going to make me move there, are you? Because it's cold and they get a lot of snow, and that's why you're probably here. He said, no, I'm not going to make you move there, but Jay, when you plant that church, I want you to begin planting churches on the West Coast. I said, well, Lord, you need to put that in the heart of whoever you're calling to plant the Denver church so that when I meet this man or woman of God, I'll just know that that's who you're calling to plant the church. Let me tell you, God has a sense of humor. We may not understand everything that we have to go through, but know this, that behind your life, that God is working for you. He is orchestrating and ordaining the plans and purpose for your life. He is for you. He is not against you. He loves you. He wants you to be successful. He wants you to prosper. He's your greatest cheerleader. And the thing I've learned about God is to bargain with him as I'm doing this stuff. I bargain with him, you know, and some people are like, I just can't believe you talk to God like that. He and I just have this thing going. He understands how I operate, and he's fine with it because he's been doing it the whole time. And so here it is, July 31st, I fly into Denver, I get my rental car, I'm driving up to Cheyenne, Wyoming to speak at Restoration Fellowship. The youth pastor calls me and says, where are you at? I said, right now I'm in Fort Collins. He said, really? My wife and I are in Fort Collins right now. Would you like to have dinner? I said, that'd be great. Now keep in mind, I've only talked to Isaac Olivares two times. First time to book a service, second time to confirm it. I don't know anything about this guy. And so we're eating dinner. And so I felt so driven to ask him a question. I said, Isaac, can I ask you a question? He said, sure, what is it? I said, do you see yourself always being the youth pastor where you're at, or is God telling you to do something different? He looked at his wife, Jamie. They smiled at each other, and he said, well, God's calling us to plant a church in Denver. And when he said that, I knew he was the guy, because there's one thing I know about God. Nothing is coincidental. Everything that God does is by action. And everything that's done by action is driven by your faith. And we have choices. We can choose to walk with him through the adventure, or we can say no. And if we say no, he'll find someone else. And so I knew that Isaac was the guy when he said that. And I was multitasking. I was eating a hamburger, talking to God and Isaac all at the same time. And I was saying, Lord, I need to hear him say something about the West Coast. I said, Isaac, is that all that God said to you, or did he tell you anything else? Isaac said, well, God told me that when I plant that church, that we're to plant three churches on the West Coast, one in Los Angeles, one in Portland, one in Seattle. I said, you're the guy. It's priceless. We've done this enough now that I get to watch their face. And he's like, what are you talking about? What guy? I said, God spoke to me in February. He told me to plant a church in Denver. That church was to plant churches on the West Coast, but he wasn't specific with me as he was with you. He told you the cities. Isaac said, we'll do it. Right now, it's taken AG World Missionaries 18 to 24 months to be fully funded. Isaac was funded 11 months. He's driven. He loved Denver. He said that he knew that at some point God was going to call him to plant a church. He just didn't know how. And so God used the Urban Outreach Network of how we do ministry. And I said to Isaac, now, Isaac, there's one thing about our ministry that you have to understand. When we plant churches in cities, we plant in the most violent, the most dangerous part of the city. Do you know where that is? He said, that's the Five Points neighborhood. I said, that's where you have to plant the church. And so we're leasing a building there right now because buildings are really hard to get because of the whole pot craze over there. And so we found a building, and this is so beautiful. That building used to be a Muslim mosque, and now it's a Christian church. Now, Isaac's model's different from all of our models, and all of our cities are different because how we plan our churches are we find the need and we meet it. Well, Denver has a population of 4,000 homeless people. And so a lot of them migrate in that area. So Isaac just felt compelled to do a Thursday night dinner church. What's a dinner church? Well, we bring in banquet-styled catered meals from catering companies, and we feed the homeless. And what happens is, a couple hours before they even open up the building, they have a line of people a half a block long waiting to get in. And when they come in, they sit down, they're eating a meal, they have church teams that minister to the people, and then Isaac shares a Jesus story. This past Thursday night was their 176th consecutive Thursday night. They've not missed a Thursday night in 3 years. He's driven by it. We're actually talking about launching a second dinner church in Albuquerque. So in December, we're going to fly over there and look at it and see. I already know where that's going to go. That'll go in the southwest part of Albuquerque. That's the most violent part of that city. And so Isaac is in the neighborhood. He's in his zone. He's building ministry. He's doing prayer walks in the community. He comes across this lady. Her name is Geraldine, and she's a crack addict. She's been in the sex trade for 30 years, and she's pregnant. So she says, Isaac, I'm pregnant. And Isaac says, well, do you mind if I pray for your baby? She said, I don't care. And so he laid hands on her belly and prayed for the baby. So for several months, when Isaac would see Geraldine, he would just pray for the baby. And then she began to get comfortable with Isaac, and she said, Isaac, do you know that I've had 4 other babies, and none of them were born in a hospital? Matter of fact, I pulled 2 of those babies out myself in a crack house. Now, this 5th baby was born in a hospital, and the baby had drugs and alcohol in her system. So the hospital says to Geraldine, you can't take this baby home. Do you have any family? She said, I don't have family. Do you know anybody? She said, I don't know anybody. Can you think of anybody? She said, I can. She said, my pastor. See, he built a relationship with her. Even though she has lived in sin, she looked at him as her pastor. And so 11 days after Nasea was born, Jamie and Isaac took that baby home. Do you know what Nasea means? For God's performed a miracle. A year later, they adopted that baby. If you get anything out of this message this morning, this is what I want you to get. That all God wants from you and I is commitment. That's it. He just wants us to be committed to the cause of Christ, to be committed, to be willing to do whatever he asks us to do. Listen, it's not easy. I mean, now we're 11 years, you know, we're 11 city plants, but man, you have not seen the pain and just the stuff it takes to build these things. And inner city ministry is probably one of the hardest, if not like beach community. It's a very hard ministry to do. People, they get pumped up about it, but they don't stay long, they don't last long. I'm the longest lasting guy in East St. Louis. I've been there 13 years. There were 3 Assembly of God churches there. The last one closed in 83. People went in there, they tried to plant church with the Assemblies of God. They left less than a year. I'm not prone to violence, I've seen it. A man across the street from our church was cleaning his parking lot. 3 young guys came up on him, shot him, killed him in broad daylight, robbed him. At our Washington Park plant on a Saturday night, a teenager was shot in the head, laying face down in a pool of blood. So the pastor comes to church on Sunday morning, and now we have tape around our building because there's a homicide in our parking lot. The mayor of that city was shot twice in the chest and killed in his car in broad daylight. A couple years ago, I had a pastor visiting with me. I could see our buildings. We were just driving around the community. All of a sudden, we were caught up in gang crossfire. On my side of the van, 300 feet, 20-some gunshots going off. And I have no idea who they're shooting at. I duck down. I'm slapping that pastor and trying to get him down. We curb check our van. Then I pop up. I'm 10 feet from the driver and the shooter looking right at him, thinking, what are they going to do? They pull out of the parking lot. 200 feet behind, they shot up 2 cars. 6 people were hurt. So I know what it takes to do this stuff. And so it's commitment. But God wants you to be committed where you're at with your life in reaching people that don't know him. If we'll be committed, then we will take our city. if we will be committed, then we can win people to Christ and see people's lives changed. Because friend, living in Christ is more than you and I. It's more than our life. It's about the kingdom. Well, it was a few years ago that I flew into Cleveland, Ohio. I went to Teen Challenge in Perryville, Ohio, right outside of Cleveland. And at that time, I didn't have a GPS. Matter of fact, my GPS burned out on me last night, so I had to stop and get a new one. But, you know, back a few years ago, I did not have a GPS. I have a built-in GPS in me. But now I've gotten spoiled to have a GPS. And so here I get to the airport. I get my rental car. I'm heading down the highway, and I know how to get to Teen Challenge. And so the road I need to be on, it's two interstates. They Y out. And on the interstate I need to be on, there are two Ohio State troopers that have the interstate blocked. Now, I'm starting to panic because now I'm going down this different interstate, and I'm already processing everything because I already know what's on the east side of Cleveland. That's the flats. That's the worst part of the city. That's where I don't want to go. I'm thinking like some of you in here today. I want to drive down far enough, cut over, go through a couple little communities, do a suburb, and get back on the road I need to be on. And so I thought I went far enough down, but I did not. All those little one-way streets kicked me smack dab on the east side of Cleveland. I'm in the ghetto. You say, well, how do you know you were in the ghetto? Because I'm starting to see all the burned-out houses. Now I'm starting to see all the boarded up buildings. Now I'm seeing all the housing projects and all the men standing on the corners holding up the walls. And then it dawned on me, God, you set me up. You stuck me here today. I know this was you. I'm here now, so I'm going to drive around this community and look at it. I spent an hour and a half driving around the east side of Cleveland. And then I began to weep. Then I began to cry. I was sobbing. I wear contacts. I had to pull my car over. And I said to the Lord, why am I crying like this? And I heard him saying that still small voice, because Jay, this is how I feel every day. I want you to plant church in this neighborhood. And so I said, okay, God, I will if you give me planters. It took him a year and a half. He gave me the Willard family. Now, I did my best to try to talk them out of not living there. I said, if you're going to live there, get a big ADT sign. Put it in your front yard. Get a loud barking dog, because they have five kids. They chose the neighborhood. They live right in the middle of the flats. And they're typical urban outreach guys. They just didn't sit around, oh, well, God's not give us a building, so we can't start ministry till we have a building. They hit the ground running. They started winning people to Christ. And they said, we don't have a building. What do we do? And they said, well, we're just going to open up our house and have a house church. So on Thursday nights, they were having between 40 and 60 people in their house. Could you imagine? Then they started Sunday morning church in their house. Then they started tutoring inner city kids after school. They'd have 20-some kids in their house tutoring them Monday through Friday. And then the house next door became available. The bank sold them a 1,600-square-foot house for $500. That'll tell you what kind of neighborhood you're in. You can buy that kind of house. So they renovated it, and then they moved their house church from their house to that one. And so now they operate out of that house. And I was up there in April with them for 3 days. I slept upstairs. I made sure I slept next to the window with it cracked so I could keep an eye on my car. Because they like stealing Dodge Challengers and Dodge Chargers. I had a Charger as a rental. And we weren't even there 15 minutes. I heard gunfire going off. That stuff freaks me out. When I hear gunfire, it's because they're hunting. They're not killing each other. But we did it. We launched that church, and it's been a beautiful thing. So here's where we're at. We have our Washington, D.C. plant. We're in Staten Island, New York City, in the Jersey Street Projects. We're in Cleveland, Ohio. We're in Covington, Kentucky. We're in St. Louis, Missouri. We're in Washington Park in East St. Louis, Illinois. We're in Denver, Colorado. We just started our newest work, June of last year. We're in the St. Rock 7th Ward of New Orleans. I flew into New Orleans last night just so I could meet my guy for dinner last night and hang out with him. And then our newest work goes online here in the next couple weeks. We'll be in Phoenix. Phoenix has a homeless population of 26,000. I mean, when I'm out there, you see homeless people everywhere. And the guy that's going to launch that work, James Turner, this guy is like John the Baptist on steroids. I mean, I used to have really long hair. My hair used to be down 11 inches down my back. And I had a big bushy goatee. And people's like, man, he's like a modern day John the Baptist. Well, as I've aged, I've kind of cooled down a little bit, right? And so it's nice to see that God has a modern one named James Turner. And he's gonna lead the charge there. And if the Lord tarries in the next few years, we're gonna launch another 10 to 15 cities. So here's where I'm at. I have two prayer requests this morning. And musicians, you can come forward. Prayer number one, would you pray with us every day that God will give us the right church planner for the right city? So far, we've launched all these works. I've kept all my guys. I haven't lost any of them yet. So we're doing something right. Would you pray that God gives us the right people for the right cities? Right now, we're in 11 different states with what we're doing. And then number two, if and when you're taking on missionaries, would you prayerfully consider partnering with us? See, the reason why we're able to run our ministry like we do, debt-free, is because of the generosity of God's people. I have one of the highest budgets in U.S. missions, maybe even in the Assemblies of God as a whole. My monthly budget is $17,658 a month. And I'm at like $15,755. They just keep raising it. Every 4 years when I go for reapproval, they keep raising my budget because of what the works that we're doing. And so those are my prayer needs today. And so I just want to say to you this morning, thank you, and God bless you for allowing me to share our heart today with you.